CJ Box. Welcome to KDNK.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
You're very much welcome. And I'm very excited, as are millions of others around the world, that there is a new Joe Pickett novel slated to drop next week. It's the 18th one, and it's called The Disappeared. Tell me about The Disappeared.
Well, in this book, Joe Pickett is a Wyoming game warden based in the Bighorns. And in this book, the new governor of Wyoming drops in on Joe and asks him to do a mission on his behalf, and that's to travel all the way across the state south to the upper North Platte River Valley around Saratoga to investigate the disappearance of a wealthy British woman ad executive who's left a dude ranch after her stay and then never returned back to England. And it's become somewhat of a big issue in the tabloid press over there. And Joe sent down there because he's a game warden and can kind of integrate himself into the community to try to find out what happened to her.
Well, your tail hangs on that for sure. A lot of your books are known for bringing or framing the story around a hot button issue or topic. What's the one involved in this book?
Well, there's a couple of things going on. One is kind of an exploration of the dude ranch industry and that kind of tourism in the Mountain West, where wealthy people from celebrities, politicians from this country and also internationally come to spend a week or so on a dude ranch and play cowboy for a week, and how that kind of juxtaposition of Old West and New West comes together. So that's one thing. And then the other thing is that Joe Pickett's buddy, Nate Romanowski, who is the outlaw falconer who packs a very large handgun, asks Joe to look into the fact that fellow falconers like him who have eagle permits to hunt with eagles are being denied those permits from the Fish and Wildlife Service. And Nate would like Joe to try to figure out what's going on and why they no longer have access to those birds.
Oh, okay. So I guess Wyoming is a little bit behind the curve of Colorado in terms of being invaded by the wealthy. I was a little surprised to discover the extent to which that is happening up there. Evidently, that's a real issue now, isn't it?
Well, I mean, you know, dude ranches have been around for hundreds of years. One thing that's kind of new in that business is the super luxury resort-type dude ranch. And I spent some time on one of them talking to the management and then talking to some of the guests to kind of get a handle on that. And I just find it fascinating that people who are, you know, really in the fast lane wherever they live, always connected online, always on their phones, consider a week away from all of that being totally unplugged as like a perfect vacation. I think in the past, dude ranches used to have a whole different kind of marketing message when that went out. Now it's like, come here and get away from the rest of the world for a week.
Huh. How about that? So well, Jackson has seen that for decades, but you said you said this one in Saratoga, the southern part of the state, probably a part of the state that a lot of people don't know about. Describe the Sierra Madre Mountains and the Snowy Range and where you've set your book.
Right. It's in the upper North Platte Valley. It's an area that isn't as well known, like you say, but is also really frequented by extremely wealthy people. There's several big dude ranches here, as well as some resort-type clubs that people fly their jets into. But it's not a mass tourism destination by any means.
Until this book comes out.
Well, we'll see.
Well, I understand that the Wolf Hotel has a room called the Joe Pickett Room.
They do now, yeah. When I write about a specific area, sometimes I have fictional towns and fictional locations. But when Joe Pickett moves, whether he goes to Yellowstone Park or Jackson Hole, or in this case Saratoga, I try to do that as accurately as I can. And in this book, when Joe Pickett arrives in Saratoga, he gets a room at the Wolf Hotel, room number 9, which is really up there. And the owners of the hotel have now called that the Joe Pickett room.
How about that? Well, I understand that's familiar territory to you. Your first job out of college was as a reporter at the Saratoga Sun.
That's right. And I really fell in love with the area. And my wife and I bought a small little ranch near here and really enjoy it. It's kind of different to write about things right out the window, but everybody was very cooperative, and everybody in town seems to enjoy the fact that this one is going to feature the area as it is, and naming real names, and we'll see if people actually do show up as a result. I don't know.
Well, they won't stay, though, because of your winters, I guess.
That's right. It all takes place during a very brutal January in Wyoming.
Well, in fact, you have a couple of really fine descriptions of the cold. One of them was, it was so cold it took you by surprise, which is great.
Yeah.
And the other one was, the cold pinched your skin between its fingers and gave it a sharp twist.
Well, yeah, and that's what it feels like when it's 20 or 30 below and you step outside, yes.
Well, now, you know, we're suffering through one of our warmest and least snowy winters in ages, maybe ever. Is it the same up in Wyoming this year?
It depends where. In and around Saratoga, the snowpack's about 90%, but everybody would like it to be a little higher. And
sure,
there hasn't been as much snow, you know, in the lower elevations as usual.
Hmm. I read, CJ, that you are a native of Casper and that you, as a boy, made frequent trips to the public library and you were taken in by those librarians who passed you a lot of books to read. One of the series that you read as a kid was one that I read, too, Encyclopedia Brown. I hadn't thought
That's
of Encyclopedia
right.
Brown.
I suppose those books still exist out there, but at the time... Yeah, I was really into those. I think it's probably the first series I ever read, and that's when I kind of discovered how great libraries can be. And the librarians did what they called it, I think, interlibrary search or something. So they made sure that I could obtain and read all of those books.
Huh.
And then when I was done with that series, they would kind of challenge me with more sophisticated reading and. I learned probably more in the library than I ever did in school.
Yeah, well, that's impressive. That's really great. You know, you're just a couple years younger than I am, and so that series had a lot of meaning for me, too. One of the important things about that for me was that it demonstrated that you could be smart, and that was kind of cool to see somebody that you could respect who's smart.
Right, and he's just a regular kid, but has a lot of determination and really puzzles things out in pretty clever ways.
Well, another person who thinks for himself is your hero, and Joe Pickett, of course, is who I'm talking about. You know, 40 years ago for me, it was all about the Grateful Dead, and now I read detective novels and watch the NFL, and I joke with my mother about that all the time. She's a Wyoming native. In fact, she was also born in Casper. And, yeah. And so she loves Joe Pickett. So here's an 86-year-old woman and, you know, an old hippie who loved Joe Pickett. And I'm trying to figure out why that is. What's your take on that?
Boy, you know, I don't really know. I never set out strategically to try to figure out how to do this. But I think it's a couple of things. I think the setting is important. I hear from readers all the time that they enjoy the kind of exotic Wyoming setting and the outdoor nature of the books on the one hand. But also I think Joe himself is just kind of a normal guy. He's not a Superman. He has his probably best quality or most important quality is that when he gets involved in some kind of case or investigation, he will follow it through to the end no matter what. But also I think readers tend to like his family. You know, unlike you know, a detective series or sort of PI kind of thing, private investigator. Joe's married. He has three daughters that he dotes on, and they're an important part of every book. So I think he just kind of comes across as maybe a little more realistic than some of the heroes out there.
Well, it's interesting to me that his family and Joe, they're so sympathetic, and they obviously love each other to death. And I'm curious to know how a man can draw out and flesh out female characters so well. How are you able to do that?
Boy, that's a good question. I think probably, I mean, in my own family, we have three daughters.
Oh.
And they're always talking, so I'm always, always listening to them.
Okay.
But they're also my first readers now. Whenever I get a manuscript done, it goes to all three daughters and my wife and my female agent. So they set me right if I've got wrong perspective or have a female character maybe thinking away or saying something that a female would maybe be less likely to say. But mainly I think I just kind of treat my female characters as human beings and don't try to sexualize them and make them real people and sympathetic people, I hope.
Well, Joe Pickett's wife, Mary Beth, is a true partner, and she has been since the very beginning of the series. She's smarter
right.
than Joe, and the cool thing is that Joe knows that.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what that's like. my wife's kind of the same way.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, she has been very, very involved in the case. She's kind of serves as his researcher and background information, and because she works in a library, has access to all sorts of information that she uses to help him when he's out in the field investigating something.
And I'm charmed by the fact that whenever Joe is out in the field working for the governor, whichever governor it is, he calls her just about every day just to kind of update her, and he sort of uses her as a sounding board for his theories, doesn't he?
That's right, and she is very smart, as is his three daughters.
Huh. Well, let's talk about the three daughters. Sheridan is the oldest, and she figures prominently in this new book, The Disappeared. I don't want to spoil anything about it, but, you know, she's growing up, isn't she, Sheridan?
Right, and she has taken a job after graduating from college, taken a job as a wrangler on the Silver Creek ranch, on the exclusive Dude Ranch. So because of what she does, she's able to offer a lot of insight into the ranch operations, into the guest relations, and into the particular woman who has gone missing. So she's very much kind of in step with Joe on an investigation and turns out to be pretty useful.
And I think it's fair to say Joe, I don't know if sympathizes is the word, but he resonates the most with his oldest daughter, doesn't he?
Right. They've got a very close relationship because she grew up going on ride-alongs with him out in the field and kind of knows what he does and how he operates.
Uh-huh. One of the cool things about your series, your Joe Pickett series, is that they're aging in real time. And I think that's real key to the appeal of the series. And so now Sheridan is graduated from college. She has her first serious romance in this book. And, of course, that's a little perplexing to Joe, isn't it?
Right, yeah. He's never really dealt with his daughter as an adult before.
Uh-huh.
And so she's in a different setting and, like you said, has this romance that he's kind of suspicious of. But so it's you know, they're both adults now, and he's finding that a little more difficult than probably she is.
And Sheridan, though, is, I think, pleasantly surprised at the fact that her father is now treating her as a grown-up. And there's a little passage in there that just rings true for me because I have a 25-year-old son. And, you know, I love where we're at now, the two of us, because we have deep conversations about this and that. And I sense that it's the same dynamic between Joe and Sheridan.
I think it is. And there's several scenes where that occurs.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Another of the daughters, Joe's daughters, that has figured prominently in several of your books is April. She's not much of a presence in this new book, but she has figure prominently in some of my favorites of the Joe Pickett series. But you know, I'm kind of go ahead.
She's kind of the wild one. Yeah,
she is a wild one. And but you know, it's funny. And correct me if I'm wrong. I sort of read blurbs of all the books because I didn't read them in order, which maybe is a mistake. But I've read every one of the Joe Pickett novels, and I can't recall any of the novels that features Lucy. Are there plans?
What? I'm kind of correcting that with the next book because I'm 200 pages in, and Lucy is much more prominent in the book that will come out next year than she has been in previous ones.
Oh, that's good news. The other thing, I was looking at a map of Wyoming this morning and trying to remember where you set various of your books. One of my favorites was set in the Red Desert, the southwest corner of Wyoming. And then, of course, a lot of them are centered in the Bighorn Mountains, which are,
right.
I think, probably, well, you can't say. There's so many beautiful ranges in Wyoming. But, you know, I'm thinking to myself, I don't recall any of these novels being set in the Wind Rivers. And to my mind, the Wind River Mountains are the spiritual center of your state.
Oh, I love the Wind Rivers. When I was talking about it being sometimes using fictional settings, the book Nowhere to Run, the idea from that book of the two brothers who are up in the wilderness on their own, who encountered Joe Pickett, comes from a story that actually happened in the Wind Rivers. I just changed the location of it to another part of the state. But uh-huh. I agree with you that it would be a good idea, and I will in the future set something more in the Wind Rivers, probably around Pinedale or Lander.
Okay. Well, you know, you mentioned earlier that the fact that it's that the land plays such an important part in this series of books, it reminds me a little bit of Tony Hillerman. I would say that your books and Tony Hillerman's books are really the only detective thrillers that I've really gotten into. And I realize that part of the reason is because both of them are so set in their setting. It's a big part of every story, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and that's a high compliment because Tony Hillerman was kind of the pioneer in this kind of genre about, you know, a rural Western setting and really mining it for the, you know, the realism of it. And so thank you. But yes, I'm the terrain, the atmosphere, the feeling, the light are really important. And because these are outdoor books, they're described, but hopefully not too long in detail so that people get bored with it.
You know, I'm curious why you made Joe Pickett a game warden and not a cowboy or a politician or a mechanic. Why game warden?
Well, from the very first book, Open Season, I was never intending to write a series. I was writing a book about, in my mind, a contemporary issue, and that's the Endangered Species Act and how, you know, well-meaning legislation sometimes goes awry on the ground where it takes place. And that was the issue I wanted to write about with the first one, kind of based on the black-footed ferrets of Wyoming. And when I was writing it, at first the protagonist was going to be a sheriff and then a journalist, but it made the most sense to have the protagonist be a game warden who would be really involved with that issue. So that's why I was a game warden. He would be involved in, you know, the endangered species and being out in the field and dealing with landowners. And then when the publisher bought the book and wanted two more with Joe Pickett, then the series was born.
Well, he's a remarkably sympathetic character, as I said earlier. And another one, despite his, I don't know if flaws is the word, but, you know, Nate Romanowski, you've described Nate as the scariest, most admirable guy ever. Tell our listeners about Nate Romanowski, who makes a big appearance in this new book.
He does. Nate Romanowski is an outlaw falconer who has a special forces background and carries one of the largest handguns available, and he's got his own kind of sense of justice and sense of pace. And he's been with Joe on and off since the third book, And he does, yeah, he shows up in this one with his issue. He's trying to go straight, in a way, and re-enter civilization from some earlier books. But he still has some of those episodes that that occur where he lashes out, and it happens a couple of times in this book.
Yes, it does, although he didn't tear any ears off this time.
No, but there's a scene in a fish hatchery that's one of my favorites.
Yeah, I guess we won't go further than that. That might be a spoiler, but it is pretty funny. There's no doubt about that. Well, what's next? You know, I guess we could talk a little about the standalone books, but I don't think that's necessarily a focus now because your new book is not a standalone book. But you don't just write Joe Pickett novels, do you?
That's right. I've got five standalones, working on another one. They tend to come out every other year, and they generally take place outside of Wyoming, and they're a little darker. Generally, and I get to try some different things as a writer and try some different techniques that hopefully will make the series better, too. But there are some people who have read all the standalones and none of the Joe Pickett books. So I know that there's certainly a readership out there for those, and they're fun as well. But the next one will be another Joe Pickett book coming out next March.
Well, that's cool. I think I read somewhere that three of your favorite, I almost said albums, books, is are Open Season, Blue Heaven, and Badlands. And two of those three are standalone novels, aren't they?
Right. And with the standalone, too, you know, you have to reinvent a whole new world each time. So they tend to be a little more unique in my mind sometimes than the Joe Pickett ones that have the same characters and located in the same area.
Huh. Is it hard to keep Joe Pickett and Nate and Mary Beth and the family fresh every story?
I think, yeah, it's a challenge, but by the fact that they do age in real time kind of changes it up and makes it a kind of a fresh palette each time.
Uh-huh. Huh. Well, C.J. Box, I want to thank you for engaging millions of readers in a series that, at first glance, doesn't hold out a lot of promise compared to some, but you get into it and it's like, this is the best stuff ever. So I just want to thank you for creating characters and stories that resonate across the age spectrum and across genders, you know, all of it. It's pretty universally acclaimed, isn't it? And I know that because, as I said earlier, my mother loves it. My son reads you. I read you. It's pretty cool that you managed to bring in a lot of people into your circle.
Well, it's really my pleasure, and thank you very much.